On this episode of Post Game Shake, we compare our March Madness brackets, bring on St. Louis Blues forward Zach Sanford to talk about his hockey career, and finish up with NFL free agency.
Welcome back to Post Game Shake episode 20. A little bit of a milestone, Muzz, if I must say.
Yeah, this is a big one for us. When we first started doing this, we weren't really sure where it was going, but to get to 20 episodes, I mean, this thing's just going to keep going.
And for us to say that we didn't really know where it's going, we still don't really know where it's going, but
no idea.
to say that we've done 20 episodes means we've done this for 20 weeks. Well, more than that, because we started doing it once a week, you know, once we did the interviews. But I mean, 20 is a big deal, at least for us.
20 weeks, that's like 5 months. We're almost at half a year of just podcasting weekly. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, whether you guys think it's a big deal or not is kind of relevant, but we're both pretty pumped about it. So,
and the other thing for me too is how far we've come, just on like the overall quality. And maybe, you know, people are still like, "Hey, it's not that great," but I think most people think it's really, you know, pretty well done, especially compared to where we started. Like I know my parents listened to the Mike Volman episode. And I was like, hey, maybe start somewhere around episode 9 or 10 because yeah. The quality is just so much better.
Yeah, and we need to get Vols back on so we can, well, one, kind of just follow up on the first combo we had with him, but two, get him on an interview where it's not terrible quality.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be a good one. So I'm definitely excited for that this summer.
Yeah, so we'll get him back on this summer. Mm-hmm. So I think the first topic we're going to touch on, and we're also bringing on another interview today. Big shout out to Matt Holzhauser for getting us Zach Sanford of the St. Louis Blues. We interviewed him last week. So that interview, is coming in a couple minutes. But before we talk about that.
You just did the episode to interview crossover.
I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Didn't I?
I'm famous for that.
Classic post game shake misconception there. But before we get to the interview with Zach Sanford, which is a great one, he talks about a lot of cool things in NHL and otherwise. I mean, what else are you doing today at work, at home? You're filling out a bracket for the college tournament. So I know you just filled out yours like 10 minutes ago. So how do you feel about it?
I feel really good. Anytime that I can bring Murray State to the Final Four, I feel really solid.
Yeah, so no chance you brought them to the Final Four.
I did. It's Michigan State versus Murray State. And I have Kansas State versus North Carolina. And I actually feel great about all of it.
You put Murray State in the Final Four?
Yeah, man. You got to represent the clan.
Wow.
I know. It's but honestly, think about it. You have no idea what's going to happen. If you're going to pick an upset, it's as likely that that's going to happen as, I don't know, who else is in that side, that Buffalo is going to make it or Texas Tech's going to make it. Maybe a little less likely, but there's going to be an upset somewhere, and I'm more than happy to bring the Murray clan into the Final Four.
So first of all, I think you're crazy.
Yeah.
But I love the just ultra confidence in the Murray State squad. I picked them to win as well, so we have that going for us. But
when Marquette one game.
Legit one game. When Marquette beats them by 45, I'm going to just text you a bunch of ha, 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 ha.
All right. Wait, when would Marquette play them?
The first game?
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant later down the line you were going to say, yeah, the first – because you picked them to win the first game, so I wasn't looking at that one.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't really care that they – it's just a good upset pick, but most of the time when you pick an upset, you then pick them to lose the next game, not pick them to go to the Final Four.
Yeah, I'll regret it next week at some point, maybe this weekend, what, like Saturday or something. I will be disappointed.
When they play Thursday. They play Thursday at 4:30.
No, they're going to win that one, though.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, but I'm saying when they lose by 40 in that game, I'll text you laughing at you.
Gotcha. Okay, now I get what you're saying. So what's your Final
Four? That's
what
I'm saying. My Final Four is – and to preface this by saying that we compare this – like filling out a bracket to drafting a fantasy football team. Like sometimes you get to round 8 and you're like, man, you're like looking at the board or looking at your computer and you're like, I don't like my team at all. I might go 0-13 and have to, you know, pay for next year's draft or do something stupid that the rest of my friends decided to have me do. But that's how I felt filling this bracket out. But my Final Four is Duke, Gonzaga, UNC, and Tennessee.
Duke, Gonzaga, so, UNC, and Tennessee. Okay.
1-1-1-2. I feel good about 3 of those. I don't feel great about Gonzaga, but I picked Florida is my big upset. I picked them to make it to the Sweet 16 and beat Michigan. If I had Michigan in, I probably would have picked them to go to the Final Four, but then it was like Gonzaga or Texas Tech, and I was like, I don't like either of those picks. That was when I started to feel like I don't love my bracket, but I like the other three picks.
Do you ever have, so keeping on the fantasy football talk, you ever have teams like year after year that you just can't help but pick? I have like, you know, like the Josh Gordon for me in fantasy. If he's on the board, I'm taking him.
Yeah, this year
Gonzaga is that team for me. And the only reason they're not in the final, probably maybe the final in the championship, is because I had Murray State beat them.
See, I'm using the opposite. I'll never pick Gonzaga to win until they win, because I just don't think they're going to. It's almost like Coach Rice's reasoning for Oregon, but in a completely just unreliable way. I just don't think they're ever going to win. I don't have any information or stats to back that up or reasoning. I just don't ever think they're going to win. But I ended up picking them to go to the Final Four just because, you know, I don't know. They just kind of ended up there. I kind of backed into it, but I'm confident about the other three. But to answer your question, I like Michigan State. I know they're well coached. I like picking Villanova because they're also well coached.
We know that.
And shout out to Joey Flannery post game shake bump. So hopefully they can get us to the promised land. But the only team that I really picked a lot is UVA, only because I'm from Virginia. But they lost to a 16 seed last year.
So yeah, but I think that really
screwed up my bracket, in case you were wondering.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. But I think that there's three classes of kids still on that team for the most part. You know, I don't know how many kids left for the draft or whatever that are looking for revenge. And there's no way they're an early exit this year.
Yeah, I don't know. Gardner Webb's supposed to be pretty tough. So
yeah, Gardner Webb. I think I have them going to the Elite Eight.
UVA. Do you even know where Gardner Webb is? I don't.
Nope, never heard of it.
Gardner Webb University is in Bowling Springs, North Carolina. There you go.
Okay.
You learn something new every day.
You do. I don't know if I'll ever use that tidbit of information ever again, but
if they beat UVA, you'd be like, hey, do you know where Gardner Webb is? It's in North Carolina. Yeah, great. Like, great school.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, great, great kids. So, okay, so what's your Final Four then?
My Final Four is Michigan State, Murray State, Kansas State, North Carolina.
I just realized that you had already told me that. Yeah, so who do you?
I did already tell you that. So my champion, or I should say my national champion, is Michigan State over North Carolina.
Okay, so your final game is a legit one. I could very easily see that. So, all right, that's respectable. I have Tennessee beating Duke only because it just didn't. I honestly wanted to put Duke and UNC in the finals because I watched them play the ACC championship game, and it was actually a pretty fun game to watch. No, sorry, the semifinals. Pretty fun game to watch, but I was like, I can't pick Duke against UNC. Like, that's just, come on. Every normal person or just regular person can pick Duke versus UNC. So I threw Tennessee in there just for shits and gigs.
Yeah, I wish Duke wasn't playing Michigan State so early in the tournament, because I thought that –
Yes.
I thought they were two of the better – like, that, I'm not a big college basketball guy, but – Zion, obviously, like, tough to pick against that kid. But for whatever reason, I think Michigan State's the real deal. Kind of sucks they got a 2 seed, but at the same time, I kind of like that I get to pick a 2 seed to win it all. So
if Michigan State was on the other side of the bracket, I would have gone Duke, Michigan State in the championship game.
Yeah, I think I would have too.
But I'm pissed that I could. But picking that game, I like wanted to go with my heart and pick Michigan State. Just it's fun to root against Duke. But like, I've watched Duke play a couple times, and they're like, they're pretty unstoppable. So
yeah, we'll see. It'll be exciting. I'm pumped. So this is coming out Tuesday. So the play-in games start today, and then
tomorrow. Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry.
You following? Come on, follow the train of thought, Tim. Today is Tuesday for everybody that's listening.
Yeah.
And then Thursday, 2 days from now, the tourney starts. Let's dance.
Starts the madness. Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully.
Well, you there?
Me?
I hear you now.
I got a phone call. Got to figure that out. Anyway, hopefully I have some time to kind of check it during the day, and then also get home and start watching some of the madness. So yeah, it should be awesome.
Cool. All right, I think that wraps it up. Maybe, or what do you want to?
Yeah, no, I think that's all for the beginning segment.
Yeah, we just wanted to get that in there. We'll shoot it over to the interview, and then we're going to talk a little bit about free agency after, if you guys want to stick around. So.
And a little bit about the college admission scandal too.
Yeah, some good stuff to cover this week. It's nice to actually have a few obvious topics that are interesting to us and probably interesting to other people. So
hopefully interesting to other people. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
At least interesting to us.
All right, sweet.
Cool.
Without further ado, here is our interview with Zach Sanford. We have the pleasure of bringing on an Auburn, New Hampshire native, former Boston College stud, Washington Capitals second-round draft pick in 2013, and now current St. Louis Blues forward, Zach Sanford. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pumped to have you, man. Appreciate
it. Yeah, I'm pumped to be on.
Yeah, so, thanks to Holtz. Holtz's hooking it up for us.
He is hooking it up.
Yeah, he's absolutely come through in the clutch. The last two out of the last three have been through Holtz, which is great.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's a good deal. Big man on campus, I guess.
I wouldn't say he's a good dude. He's all right. All right. Anyway, so you're on a road trip right now, Ottawa, right?
Yep, we just got into the hotel here in Ottawa.
How is it? Is it cold?
It's actually not that cold, but it's snowing pretty hard right now.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Never ends. You
don't like to see that when you land.
No. What's this road trip like? You guys were somewhere before this or you were home before?
No, we played at home yesterday, flew here today. We play Ottawa tomorrow, and then I think it's to Buffalo Saturday, and then Pittsburgh Saturday, Buffalo Sunday, and then we're back home for a little bit.
All right. Not a bad one. What are the back-to-backs like? A little bit different than playing college back-to-backs, I'm assuming?
Yeah, a little different. We've had a ton of them lately. I think this will be our fifth week in a row, maybe, with a back-to-back. So I guess our team's kind of getting used to them, but they get pretty tough, that's for sure.
Were you how many games did you play in the AHL?
This year?
Just total? In general, like how many 3-and-3s did you have to – I think the East is worse, right? You do a lot of 3-and-3s in the AHL.
Yeah,
the East.
A lot more 3-and-3s, but it's a lot less travel, so it's not that bad.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think like when I played 25 games in Hershey a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And most of them were like an hour and a half drive max.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of nice when you're traveling on a private plane now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not bad.
you can live with that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Makes traveling almost something to look forward to. You probably get sick of it, but that's still sweet.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. It's pretty sick to walk onto a private plane and get your big seat and get some food and then get into a nice city and go to a nice dinner at all these different restaurants and stuff. So it's being on the road has its perks for sure.
Absolutely.
A little per diem in the pockets too.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. Into the pocket and right out a couple hours
later. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do on the plane? You a cards guy? I'm assuming you don't like read books. I don't think anyone reads books anymore.
It's funny you say that. I actually started a book today.
Oh, wow.
I'm too low on the rank right now for the card table, but maybe one day I'll get there.
Fair enough. I actually made a New Year's resolution. Yeah, I actually made a New Year's resolution. I was going to read 3 books this year, and I haven't read one page, so good for you.
You got a lot of time. Thanks. You got a lot of time.
Yeah, true. You still got, what, 9 months left?
Yeah,
I got a while. Yeah.
What book are you reading, Zach?
I forget the title. It's just it's kind of just about how to, look at things differently and, gain like more perspective and have more of a positive outlook on stuff.
Nice. Translated to your game. That's great.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right. So let's hop right into hockey stuff and just chronologically, the first thing that's kind of important that happened in your hockey career, was getting drafted by the Caps in 2013, second round. So I'm assuming you were ranked pretty high. Did you attend the combine?
Yeah, I did actually. Geez, that was a while ago now, I guess. That was pretty cool. That was kind of my first experience with, like NHL teams and scouts and how they kind of work and think. So that was definitely a little different at the time.
Yeah, what are they asking for? Like, you sit down with any of those guys while you're there, or is it more just show up, do your thing, and, I don't know, get out of there? Or...
Well, everybody kind of knows about the workout part, but, like, the day or two before that, you kind of – whatever teams want to meet with you, their scouts and GM and sometimes coaches, I'm not sure if they're there, but, you sit down with, like, 15, 20 minutes with those guys, and they just drill you with – sometimes really easy questions and sometimes they just try to fuck with you and get you going.
what teams were more picky and stuff about the type of questions?
The only one I specifically remember was, I think it was San Jose asked me if I was a goal scorer or if I was a playmaker. And I think at the time I had like twice as many assists as goals. And I don't know if I must have just not been thinking. I said I was a goal scorer. And they all just started ripping me apart. Saying that I wasn't a goal scorer, I didn't know my game yet and stuff like that.
It's so funny. The last two guys we had on, we had Danny O'Regan on last week, or actually a couple days ago, and he was a San Jose guy, and we had Colin Blackwell the week before, he was a San Jose guy, and they both talked about how ruthless the some of the scouts can be. And I kind of had a little bit of that experience myself, not as much as those guys did, but yeah, they do go a little tougher on you.
Yeah, definitely.
Did he say I think Danny was also saying that like some were having him like take tests and stuff. Like, what was the weirdest thing you had that one of the teams made you do?
Nothing too crazy. They make you take like some personality type tests, which I don't know how. I guess they're thinking team wise, but that doesn't really have much to do with hockey. But I don't really remember anything too weird that I had to do.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I figured it'd be kind of up that alley of like, yeah, tough questions, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah.
Who did you talk to besides? So you talked to San Jose. You talked to just like, is it like a general question and answer, like with like media type style, or are teams sitting down with you and talking to you there?
No, it's kind of intimidating actually. You just walk into a room and there's 10, 15 guys sitting there, and you just sit at the end of the table, and it's like all the scouts, like you said, and like the GM and stuff, and they just kind of drill you with questions about hockey and your personality and what kind of guy you are, and just all sorts of stuff like that.
Nice. And then you obviously talked to Washington, I'm assuming, because they end up taking you.
Yeah, I think I actually had to meet with like 20 teams there. So I was kind of running around the whole time.
Jesus.
Did you think like at one point you were like, hey, like this went really well with Washington? Or like, did you really not know what was going to happen going into the draft?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of talked about those guys. Like later round picks, you kind of get a general idea. So you being an earlier pick is probably – everybody probably wants you. It's just a matter of like, who do they, you know, who do guys take in the first round? So I'm sure those teams are just as unsure as you are when it gets to that point.
Right. I mean, once you get to the draft, kind of like my agent was with me. So he was getting updates from guys he knows, like scouts and stuff. And he kind of shuffled over a couple times and was like, hey, I think you might go here or you might go here. And then it was kind of crazy out of nowhere. Washington traded up, and I think I was their third pick in the second round that year.
Wow.
Or maybe – or yeah, I think I was. And they just traded up and got me with that last pick in that round, so that was pretty cool.
Nice. Who was with you for the draft? I'm assuming you attended in person?
Yeah, I was in Newark, so I drove down with my mom and a couple of my buddies and my dad and sister, and my agents, and my girlfriend.
Nice. Not a bad time, assuming.
No, it was good. And actually, funny story. When we left, I had no idea what to do or anything. So I guess most of the guys stayed like in New York and drove in. But my mom was just like, "Ah, we'll just get a cheap hotel right down the road." So we stayed in Newark, and we were walking back to the hotel after, and this guy comes around the corner, and he was asking us if we wanted to buy any heroin off him.
Were you like, yeah, maybe not today, or what?
I was like, I'm good. My mom comes running around, starts screaming at the guy, swinging her purse at him.
Oh my god!
I was like, where am I?
I think Newark, New Jersey is a little bit different than New York City.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, I think I might have. You drive through there? Is that like on that main like 93 South kind of that same strip? Like the airport, the airport's off of it. I think I've driven through, and you're like. Or you drive past it at least, and it's like not the nicest place in the world.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
So BC, did you always have an inkling that you kind of wanted to be from BC, just being from the, you know, like the Boston, New England area, or was it a, you know, whatever school I fell in love with at the time, I was going to go there?
so growing up, I always loved BU, actually. And I hadn't, when it got to like recruiting and picking a school, I hadn't really heard much from them. And I was actually, I think I talked to UNH like on a, say, I don't remember what day, but say it was a Wednesday. And I was going to commit there Friday. And then BC called me and I visited there Thursday and I committed on the spot. So I just, like, I walked in there and got the tour and met the coaches and met some of the guys. And I just, I was like, this is the spot.
Yeah, I mean, UNH is a good school, but you get that official tour at BC, you meet Jerry York. I can't imagine that anybody would leave there and say, this isn't where I want to be.
Yeah, it's pretty tough to say no.
Yeah. What was meeting with Jerry York like for the first time?
It wasn't really what I expected. He didn't really care about hockey so much. Like, even after playing for him for a couple of years now, he's just more like, he wanted to know you as a person and he wanted to, you know, better you as a person going through there. And hockey was kind of second to him as to that. And he was actually walking me and my mom out to the car for us to leave. And he was like, we'd love to have you, da, 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 and kind of offered me a spot. And I looked at my mom and looked back at him and I was like, can I just commit right now? And he was like, really? I was like, yeah. And he was like, of course. And then we kind of went our separate ways. So it was kind of a funny time meeting him for the first time.
I can imagine. I'm sure it makes it easy on him when you're recruiting around this or committing around the spot.
Yeah, I think so too.
So your freshman class included you, Alex Tuck, and Noah Hanifin, and you guys were coming in right after Kevin Hayes, Billy Arnold, and Goudreau left a year early. Did you feel any pressure coming in there? I mean, that's a pretty stacked class that left, but also a pretty stacked class that came in. Like, what was it like kind of entering BC as a freshman? Did you guys feel any extra pressure?
Yeah, I think for me personally, definitely in the beginning, it kind of took me a while to get used to the game. And obviously every time you go from youth hockey to high school or to prep school, to juniors, to this, to that, every time you take a step up, I think it takes a little bit of adjusting. And, my first handful of games weren't so great, but then, you know, our class, especially, I think the second half or second two thirds of that year, we became, we had pretty important roles on that team. So I think, you know, that was when the pressure started to come a little bit. And then kind of once you find your role and get comfortable, it seemed to go away pretty quickly.
Yeah. So your freshman year, you guys, for like maybe your standards at BC, like losing in the first round of Hockey East, losing in the first round of the Bean Pot, and then same thing in the NCAAs, losing to Denver. How do you kind of like bounce back from that? And then, like you said, take more of a leadership role and then kind of carry that into your sophomore season where you guys, you know, came out hot and, you know, have a, like, kind of turn it around and have a great year.
Yeah. Like you said, we didn't have the greatest year my freshman year, but, you know, it's just that maturing throughout the year and figuring out how to balance college and, you know, schoolwork and when you can go out and, you know, getting used to the style of play and your teammates. I think you kind of, I guess, like I already said, you figure that out as you go. And, you know, that freshman class we had come in the next year too was really good, you know, with like Colin White, and he kind of led the way for that class and helped out huge with our team and Miles Wood and those guys. And, you know, I think it was me and Tuck actually played together both years. So for us to build that chemistry and, you know, figure out how to gel well together definitely helps a lot too.
So you guys, as Muzz mentioned, came out really hot, 12-1 in your first 13 games. You guys had 6 shutouts in a 7-game span during that streak, which is just insane. Like at what time during that season, or maybe even before the season, did you know, and you guys kind of started feeling like it was going to be a special season?
I think a lot of us going into that season had a good feeling, you know, the class above me kind of getting bigger roles and you know, I think we thought the go-to players we had that year were the guys who could definitely get it done. And obviously with Thatcher, Demko, and Nett, that helps a lot. You know, our D core was really great. They were a year bigger, a year stronger, and you know, I think our team just had really good chemistry that year too, on and off the ice.
And then, I mean, to kind of piggyback that, Beanpot, you guys beat Hartford and then BU in overtime. What was the Beanpot like? A lot of the guys we've asked who have played in Beanpot are all Boston guys and have, you know, dreamed of playing on those two nights, you know, in the Garden. So just what was that whole experience like?
Yeah, that was unreal. Obviously, like you said, my freshman year kind of sucked. You know, you lose in the first round. And then to come back, and especially when you're beating BU in the finals and overtime 1-0, that was the first 1-0 overtime game ever in the Beanpot.
Really?
Yeah. So that was pretty fun, obviously, for, you know, those four schools. That's, I would say, the second biggest trophy of the year behind the national title. So to, you know, get one of those, which I guess the classes before us, some of them had three or four, but just to get one was pretty cool. It was fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Absolutely. Like Timmy, not so much, but I grew up, I went to the Beanpot every year, both games, or I should say both days, both games on both days. I can't even imagine, like me personally, if I stepped onto the ice for a Beanpot game at the Garden, it'd be so overwhelming. You being a BU guy, or like, you know, a BU fan growing up, I'm sure it's a little ironic in that sense that you're playing against them, but it's just got to be so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty overwhelming at first when you get out there. You know, you're playing at the Garden, which is pretty sick to begin with. And then, you know, you look up, you got, especially in college, it's awesome with the bands up top and all the fans and all the students. And it's just it's kind of like a spectacle. You know, you get the police escort to the games before, and you know, you're planning on, if we win, we're going out, we get to party with the Beanpot.
Yeah,
which is awesome too. And you know, to get it done was definitely something I'll always remember.
Yeah,
we kind of mentioned it last time too, and for me, not being a Boston kid, like I'm picturing the hierarchy is national championship trophy, and then one below that, the conference championship. But we asked O'Regan too, and he said, yeah, probably the Beanpot. And you just kind of mentioned it. So Beanpot over winning the conference. Is that what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's funny. Danny said the same thing. The history of the Beanpot, I completely get it. And even like you think about like Buchergrass every year. Buchergrass loves tweeting about the Beanpot. Like there's always pictures of guys like eating cereal out of it the next morning. It's like, if I could do one thing in my life, it'd be eat a bowl of cereal out of the Beanpot.
Yeah.
Not the Stanley Cup. Not the Stanley Cup, Muzz?
All right. Yeah, sure. I'll take the Stanley Cup and then I'll take the Beanpot. But you know what I mean.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It was
awesome. So to kind of
go ahead.
If you're talking about the Beanpot, you're talking about the Beanpot some more?
No, go ahead. No, I'm done. Go ahead.
So just kind of finished off that year. I mean, you guys had a special season, but it didn't end as magical as maybe it could have. You know, but a Frozen Four appearance, just like, you know, what was it like getting to the Frozen Four and playing, you know, and playing in front of that kind of environment and being that close?
Yeah, that was another real cool thing we got to do at school. Obviously, like you said, didn't end the way we wanted to. I think we could have done a little better than we did, but you know, it happens. But like I said about the Beanpot, that's just another kind of college hockey spectacle. You know, I think we took a private plane down, which was our coach actually started getting alumni to buy us like private jets for our like faraway games. So yeah, actually I think in the Frozen Four, the NCAA might get you one.
Oh, really?
But it was pretty sick in Tampa. That rink's unreal. The weather was unreal, and you know, you show up and there's a whole greeting party for your team, and you get to move in, you go to the hotel, you go to the rink, check everything out, do some interviews with your boy Bucci.
Yep.
That's
sick, man. I was able to go to that 2012. Was that, so you guys were there? Yeah, so that wasn't your year. That was like Parker Milner. I went in 2012 with my sister and her friends. Her friend has a place down there. and just watching it from the stands, like the place has that thing up, like in the rafters that like makes a lightning bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And they like every time somebody scores, there's like a lightning bolt shoots across the ceiling, kind of. It's like the place is nuts.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure you guys didn't really get to enjoy the weather, I'm assuming, but places, I mean, Tampa's, you can't beat it.
No, yeah. We didn't get too much of the weather.
Yeah.
We were kind of stuck inside all day, but
yeah.
For the few minutes outside, it's nice to have some sun.
Yeah. What else is it like? Just like, I mean, us, you know, we obviously never played in a Frozen Four. I'm sure for, you know, the people that are going to listen, they're probably going to want to know what it's like. So, like, what else is it like once you get down there, you do the interviews, but I'm sure is the atmosphere as crazy as you'd think, or is it kind of because it's an away game type thing? Do you guys get a good following down there, that kind of stuff?
It's a little different because, you know, you don't have all your students there. I mean, some come down, but it's, you know, you're not playing in front of a couple hundred or, you know, some schools, I guess, a couple thousand of your classmates, which is one of the things that I think makes college hockey so fun.
Definitely.
But, you know, at the same time, it's the Frozen Four. You're so fired up. You know, you might never get to do this again. And, you know, I think once you get done with all the interviews and this and that, all the extra, you know, media and that type of stuff, it kind of turns into just another game.
Yeah, true. Kind of almost like probably like the Super Bowl a little bit. You got all the media hype beforehand and then becomes a business trip after that. Yeah,
exactly.
That's sweet.
So, and then right into, I mean, you obviously forwent your last 2 years. Just, I want to know about that internal decision for you and turning pro. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you kind of waited a little bit longer than most of your teammates who kind of made the decision right after the season ended. So what was it for you and making the decision to kind of sign your entry-level deal with Washington and not come back to BC?
Yeah, so most of the guys will usually, like you said, kind of try to let the school know or let their pro team know if they're coming or not right after the college season. But at that point for me, it was Washington telling me they wanted me to come play in Hershey for a year, which I didn't really think made that much sense rather than playing another year at school. So I was planning on going back to school, and then throughout talks and, you know, the development camps and, you know, the off season, it turned into more of me having a shot to play with the Caps. And then, at that point I was like, I gotta go. You know, if you can start your career, you know, in the NHL and get a shot there right away and, you know, kind of spark that a year earlier, I think, that was hard for me to turn down. And, you know, BC wasn't too happy about it, but, we're on good terms now. So that's good.
There you go. That's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
I read a pretty cool article about when Barry Trotz kind of pulled you into his office and let you know that you were starting opening night to kind of, you know, call your parents and your family and stuff. Just, I'm assuming that moment kind of made the whole decision, you know, worthwhile in your mind.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty cool to hear that, you know, especially that was actually a pretty amazing opening night. You know, it was in Pittsburgh against the Penguins, the Caps' biggest rival. And I'm pretty sure they won the cup the year before. So they were doing the whole banner raising and you know, to be a part of that was pretty cool too.
I mean, you gotta talk more about that. You know, your first NHL game is not just a regular season, regular NHL game. It's opening night against Stanley Cup champs. I mean, compare that to Beanpot, compare that to Frozen Four. Just like, what were the emotions going through in your head? A lot of people have said, like, they don't remember anything. It just kind of went by in a flash. But, you know, is there any moments that you really remember and you're kind of sitting there to reflect on?
It is kind of a lot, like you said, it just goes by in a flash. You kind of black out. And I was so nervous before that game, though. It was nothing like I'd ever played in before. It was, you know, it's the NHL, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, I'm gonna be out there with, like, Sidney Crosby, like, Ovi on our team. Like, guys you grow up watching who are your favorite players. And that was pretty cool. The only play I really remember was, I think it was Ian Cole. There was like a little scrum, and for whatever reason, he decided to grab me and he was trying to fight me. And then someone on our team was like, "It's his first game, relax, bud." And then he kind of just let go and skated away.
That's funny. They've all been there. They know what it's like.
Yeah.
Was there any point you talked to like Ovi or anything about it? How was he? Did he give you any words of encouragement?
Not really. He would just
yes. he's just the Russian on the team. Everybody's like, yeah, he would whatever. Just
the advice he would give me the most is to shoot the puck.
Oh wow, that's a shocker.
What is it not surprising?
Yeah.
Right. I think he thought it was like, I don't know if he realizes he has probably the best shot ever. But that was his go-to advice, is shoot the puck.
He just assumes everybody can put it through the back and not like him.
Yeah.
What about anybody else on the team? Like, you're getting ready for your first NHL game. Like, what are the coaches saying to you? What is their advice? I'm sure it's play simple hockey or, you know, anything else than that.
That's about it. I mean, Justin Williams, I'm pretty sure I was on his line for that game. He's you know, he's played in every type of game at this point. So to have him kind of trying to keep me calm there was pretty cool. His advice was just pretty similar, you know, keep it simple, just stick to your game. But at the same time, he really wanted to make sure I was able to take it all in and, you know, appreciate that first game and realize how cool it is to be doing something like that.
Yeah, be able to like remember it and enjoy it versus, you know, being so nervous don't do anything great out there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you obviously didn't last. I don't want to say didn't last, but didn't. You weren't in Washington for very long, and then you ended up getting traded to St. Louis when they dealt Shattenkirk. So, I mean, what was it like getting traded? Is it a kind of a cliche thing where you didn't know it was going to happen and you're just kind of in shock for a couple of days? Just kind of talk through that whole process.
Yeah, I had no idea. We were on the road in New York. And I was at dinner with, I think I was with Riley Barber. And there was like a couple of guys at dinner at another table on the other side of the restaurant. And I went to the bathroom and I saw Brett Connolly. And he was like, "Dude, did you hear we're getting Shattenkirk?" And I was like, "No way, for who?" And nobody knew who we were getting him for like a couple hours. So then like more tweets came out saying it was like this guy or that guy. And no one ever said anything about me. So I was like, all right, I'm good. And then I went back to the hotel and I got a text from Tom Wilson, actually. And he was like, "Hey, how you doing? Like, are you all right?" And I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, "So-and-so got treated, right?" Cause there's like tweets coming out or something. And he was like, "No, dude, it's you." And I was like, "What?" And then he came over to my room and broke the news to me that it was me.
Dude, that's got to be wild, man. Yeah. What were the other pieces to the trade? Do you remember?
I think from Washington, it was – who was it?
I read today. I think Washington got Shattenkirk and that goalie, Phoenix Copley.
Oh, yeah.
And then
St. Louis got me and Brad Malone and maybe a pick.
I think it was, yeah, you, Brad Malone, a first and a second pick.
Yeah.
Second round. Sounds right. So, yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. So then talk about the entire experience. Like, were you paying for a place in Washington and then trying to find a new place in St. Louis? Like, just that whole, like, we were saying to Daniel Regan, because he got traded as well, like, you don't think about all that background stuff that you have to go through, all the little things, the kind of pain in the ass stuff.
It was actually pretty good for me because Shattenkirk actually ended up moving into my apartment in D.C. and took all that over. And, send me some money for like the TVs and stuff I had there. Oh, wow. So that part was easy. And then when I got to St. Louis, they had like team apartments, I guess you would call them, that I got put up in. So I didn't have to pay for that either. So I was actually rent free for a couple months, which was nice.
That's unreal, man. Was it for everybody on the team or just guys that chose to opt into it or for more like your situation, a trade or something? Like that?
Yeah, I think they do it more for trades. I haven't heard of too many other guys getting put up in there.
I was thinking, man, if you guys had like a frat house of the hockey guys, like, that would be crazy. Just everybody's in one apartment complex.
That would be pretty crazy.
Place would burn to the ground.
What's it like now? What's your living situation? You get a place by yourself or what?
Yeah, I just got a little apartment by myself in Clayton.
Clayton. I've actually – so is that right outside the city?
Yeah, it's like the – it's a little nicer than like St. Louis.
Yeah.
Because there's not really much downtown St. Louis. It's kind of just like corporations and then like a couple like loose little restaurants or bars here and there.
They've just got that big arch, and that's like what they're known for, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You go take.
That's like all we know about St. Louis. Yeah. The Blues play there. The Cardinals play there. Anheuser-Busch and the Arch.
Yeah, yep. go take a selfie at the Arch. And all right, what do I do now?
I'm good.
Yeah, so. I brought a couple of my buddies there, and we were standing underneath it, and we were gonna go up. And I guess the like how you get up there is like this elevator thing that's like a roller coaster that like clips up and like. What? Looks pretty sketchy.
You go – I didn't even know you could go up it.
Yeah, you can go all the way up to the top. There's a couple little windows up there, but I didn't go up. I was not getting in that thing.
It's like standing over the glass floor, like looking down. Like,
yeah.
You know everything's going to be okay, but you still at that little chance. You don't want to take it.
I'm out on that. Not a big heights guy.
No, me neither.
A little bit of an elephant in the room, and I'm assuming 1,000 people have asked you this, but like we got to talk about you getting in a practice fight with Bertuzzo, and I mean, just kind of take us through that. I mean, you guys are on a roll ever since then. Coincidence? I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah, but I think everybody knows like the first half of our season was awful. Like we had all these expectations and we're going to be so good, and then we just sucked. And everyone was frustrated. You know, it was tough for guys to come to the rink and, you know, have fun out there. And obviously when you're not playing well, not winning, and it's even tougher for guys to get along, I guess. But I wouldn't say there was any, like, we never had any beef or, I guess, or anything before that. So we were good. It was just one of those things where, you know, you're both in practice and you're both trying to go hard, and you just end up getting pissed at each other. And I wasn't really expecting him to drop the gloves, but yeah, I guess he thought we were going, but
yeah, no thanks.
It happens, right? Yeah,
we're cool now. So that's all that matters.
I feel like clearly, anytime something like that happens, like we had a couple of those at Babson too. And the guys always ended up like being closer than they were before. It's just kind of a respect thing, and take your anger out and move on.
Yeah, definitely.
And now you guys are just third in the division.
I know. I was just glad he didn't like knock me out or I didn't go down. That would have been pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, at least you held your
own. I mean, it's crazy from the video. Like, well, first that there's a video of that. Secondly, and then like how like angry he looked in that fight. It was just like, man, like I wonder. We were like, I think Holtz was like, man, I wonder what Zach did to him to like piss him off that much.
I didn't really think I did anything. We were doing like a 3-on-3 down low, and those are obviously always the drills, you know, where the guys get in fights.
Oh yeah.
And
stick comes up a little bit.
Yeah. Like I just tried to push off him like to get open. I must've got him in the back or something, and he didn't like it. And we started cross-checking each other. Like happens 1,000 times. And then a fight broke out.
That's all. Yeah. And the rest is history. And yeah. I'm sure you've been asked like, a million times. Is that accurate?
Not too many, actually. All my buddies and stuff, yeah. But other than that, not too many people have brought it up.
Fair enough. So then, I mean, to kind of piggyback what you said, a lot of expectations, kind of a crappy first half of the year. And I mean, your coach got fired. You know, what's it like playing and kind of going through that experience of having kind of one singular leader in the locker room, you know, being a coach and then kind of moving on to a new coach and kind of changing things up. Has it been hard to kind of change on the fly? I mean, obviously you guys are doing better like we talked about, but you know, kind of what that whole process of transition is like.
No, I don't think it was too tough. I mean, it's not like they changed too much up. I think our style of play is still very similar too. And and how the team and the bench is run during the games is pretty similar as well. I think a lot of it was just getting a different mindset from, you know, a new coach and having him, you know, be able to step up and help bring us together and start playing like a team and acting like a team is, I think, what turned our season around.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it. It's kind of a little different, but like the Browns moving on from Hugh Jackson and then they turn it around. It just seems like when those things happen, you know, more often than not, it usually works out in your favor. So, I mean, third place now, you guys are doing great. Like, you're a playoff team.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere we were last in the league on January 3rd. And then, like, by the end of February, we were in third place or that's middle crazy. Of February or something like that.
Yeah, that's nuts. You guys weren't just, like, last in your division. You're last in the entire NHL. And then all of a sudden, like, you guys are just hotter than hot. It's crazy. I mean, like, what's it like playing? What's it like coming to the rink like that when you guys are, everything's going well? I mean, we've all been there when you're winning and everything is just great. Like, you feel you can't screw up. I mean, it must be just a huge 180 to what it was like in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it felt like a completely different team. Like, it was the beginning of the year when you're losing, everyone's miserable and everyone's pissed off all the time, and now everyone's happy and having fun and, you know, cracking jokes. And I think even when you're in that mindset, you know, when you're happy and having fun, it's so much easier to even work harder and even in practice.
I'm sure. So speaking of like cracking jokes, any like, you know, really, really funny guys, like locker room guys that just kind of keep the room loose?
We got a pretty good team for that, actually. There's a lot of guys who are pretty funny like that. Bozak's pretty funny. Maroon, they're the louder funny guys, I guess, out of the group.
Yeah, like you need that, yeah.
I'm assuming it's more the louder guys. We had a couple of like witty people who were quieter, and they would say something kind of under their breath, and like the louder person next to them would, you know, scream it, and then they get credit for the joke. It's like sometimes it's usually the louder people, but they're also mostly funny too. So
yeah, we got the quiet guy on our team is Bo Meester. He's always the one cracking jokes under his breath just to the guy next to him.
yeah.
But I don't think anybody has the balls to steal his jokes.
Fair enough. Yeah, sometimes you don't know who's funny if like you don't sit near in the locker room. That's true. What about like some of the older veteran guys? Like since you've gotten to St. Louis and kind of spent some time there, like who were some of the guys that have gravitated towards you and vice versa to kind of help you out with the transition from, you know, college to pro and that kind of thing?
I think this year O'Reilly's been great for me, and I think to all the young guys, he's always the, you know, one of the first guys out on the ice and one of the last guys off the ice. And he's got so many like crazy little drills for different skills and like tipping pucks and whacking pucks out of the air and shooting like different ways that it's definitely good to have a guy like that, you know, who's like leading the team. He's been our best player all year, and he's still out there helping out the young guys and helping out even some of the older guys too, stay out.
I saw like his pregame. I guess I'm not assuming it's his only pregame ritual, but him like juggling golf balls against the wall.
Yeah, that's pretty sick what he does.
Yeah, like I've seen goalies do it before, but I've never seen a player do it. He's lights out, does it for I don't even know how long. It's crazy.
Yeah, he does like he gets like a lax ball too, or some sort of bouncy ball, and he whacks it back and forth off the wall with his stick, and like doesn't drop it ever, and it's like going backhand, forehand, like back off the wall, like pretty hard. It's pretty cool.
Jesus.
So we've had a handful of NHL guys on so far, but I think you're our first NHL guy that's played NHL playoff games. So we're curious about what that's like, and you can compare it to other things or you don't have to compare it to anything, but just what is that playoff atmosphere like, and just how is that game? I'm sure it just completely vamps up and it's just a whole different story.
Yeah, it is just a whole nother level. I think I played like four games maybe that one year.
Yeah, that's what it looks
like.
And
I think three were in Minnesota, which is a like pretty sick place to play even during the regular season. And then you get there for playoffs, and it's that place was wild.
Yeah, no pun intended.
Yeah. Right. And then you get to the next round, and it's Nashville. And that was like the first year that they were really good. So that place was even crazier. They got that small rink, so it's so loud. It feels like a – it kind of felt like a college game, like how loud it was and how engaged, like, the fans were and, you know, all the chants and stuff like that. So,
it like seems said, like
it's just a whole nother level.
They interact a lot. Like, it almost feels – it's not a new NHL city, really. It's newer. But it's – for whatever reason, there's just so much hype around them now. And I don't know if you remember they were chanting at – maybe it was Matt Murray or something, but Roberto Luongo was like, next time I play in Nashville, I better get one of these, like, Civ chants or something. But it in that sense, it's, like, exactly like being in a college atmosphere game where they're, like – there are chants and there are stuff like Boston gets loud and places get loud, but it just seems like Nashville has like that extra level.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's probably one of my favorite places to play. I think we've kind of built a good rivalry against them the past couple of years too, which makes it even more fun.
That was kind of my follow-up question was like, you know, a lot of the tough, or I mean, I'm assuming you've been on a good amount of road trips and played in almost every city, but you know, what are some of the tougher buildings to play in and what are some of the better road trips? Like the ones that you're looking forward to the hockey, but you're also looking forward to the warm weather or the national atmosphere or stuff like that.
Obviously every California trip's great. It's always nice out there. It's, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do. There's a lot of cool places to check out. And, so I would say that's probably the best road trip. I always love going to Nashville. That's a pretty cool city too. And it's really tough to play there, but it's fun, you know, cause it's even if it's one of those days where you're not feeling great, you get to the rink and you get on the ice, you're ready to go.
Have you been able to play at the Garden yet?
No, I haven't.
That's got to be something you're looking forward to. Are you guys going to be around in this season?
So
just trying to find your schedule now.
No, we were there a month or two ago. I actually got a concussion the game before in New York.
Jesus.
Wow.
And then my first year, I think when I said I got traded, we were in New York. We were going to Boston next.
Jesus. So you just had terrible luck of not playing for the Garden.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be such a special moment. Like, obviously, you've played a bunch of NHL games now, but that first game at the Garden as an NHL player, you know, I'm sure you grew up a Bruins fan. Is that right? Yeah. So, yeah, you're not going to be playing for the Bruins, but that's just as cool. So, I mean, dude, good luck with you for that. I'm jealous, man.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll get in for the game.
Yeah.
We got faith. We have faith. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So what's the story behind these gloves that you guys give up, after the game? It's Bobby Plager's 1967 gloves. You guys like give it to your player of the game. How that whole thing stem and like, what's the background story behind that?
I honestly don't even know.
Is it just something
there
done?
Is a story. There is a story, but I don't know it.
Is it isn't like just this season thing? It's like been years down the line that this has been a thing.
It hasn't been the gloves. I mean, obviously, you've probably seen like every, like even college and stuff like that. I feel like most teams have something like that now.
Yeah.
I think last year it was like someone's mittens and a hat or something weird like that. It was like mittens and a hat that like one of the old coaches of the Blues wore. And this year it's his gloves, but I don't know. I don't really know the backstory on that.
We're going to have to do our homework and find that out for you.
Yeah.
Or you could probably figure it out easier than us, but we'll see what we can do.
All right. I'll see what I can do too.
You're just hoping that one, you know, you play well enough to get them, right? You don't really care how the story started.
Yeah, pretty much.
Have you gotten them yet?
I got them earlier in the year. I haven't got them in a while though. I need to step it up and get those back in my stall.
There you go.
There you go.
Attaboy.
Love that. That's all I have for questions. Do you have anything? You have anything else that you can think of?
No, that's pretty much it for me too. You want to hit them with your thing?
Yeah. So the last question we always say to our guests that we're starting up is a non-hockey question. It is a would you rather. It's my favorite would you rather. So for the rest of your life, would you rather have a popcorn kernel stuck in the back of your throat or Cheetos fingers for the rest of your life?
What? This is funny because I was actually ended up on some Instagram page today that was just a ton of would you rathers.
We got to give that a follow then. We got to get some.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
They weren't as complex as this one though.
Yeah, sorry to put your brain
if it's in with the pretzel. Cheeto fingers, if I lick them off.
Oh, they come right back.
They come right back.
Permanent Cheetos fingers.
And that popcorn kernel stuck there for the rest of your life.
Oh, man. I got to go with the – I'd rather have the Cheetos fingers.
We're sweeping the field, man. Yeah, I said the same thing. Danny said the same thing. Blackwell said the same. Everybody. That
kernel in your throat is such a terrible feeling.
Could not agree more. Timmy's a psychopath.
I know. And the last, like, three times someone said Cheetos fingers, I've, like, defended myself. At this point, it's not worth defending myself. It's the same story. Like, I just don't know how you can live the life with Cheetos fingers. But you know what?
We need a new one because, like, it's kind of obvious that you're the only person that thinks popcorn kernel is the answer.
That is not true. This question is great because it's a fun thing to think about. And the second reason is because it usually gets a good 50-50 answer. It's just an anomaly that three people in a row have picked it and you happen to be on the same side. So I don't want to hear it.
I like being right. That's for sure.
Yeah, actually, I almost picked it the other way around because I was thinking about like going on your phone with Cheetos fingers.
Yeah, that's there you go. Tough. That's tough.
But yeah, Touch ID does not work.
Okay, yeah, true. But you can enter your code still, dude.
Sure.
Cheetos fingers is the way to go, no doubt. No doubt. I think that wraps it up for our side of it. I think, right?
Yeah, that kind of does it. So, I mean, listen, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your road trip, and we'll be following you the rest of the way. So, good luck. Good luck tomorrow night and the rest of the season. And again, thanks for taking the time and coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Really
fun.
Really appreciate it, man. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Cool. All right, man. Take it easy.
Bye.
That interview was brought to you by State and Liberty. State and Liberty was founded to develop the perfect dress shirt for athletes. Off-the-rack dress shirts are made for the masses, not for somebody with an athletic build. They provide more room in the upper body with an extremely tailored waist, catering to those with a V-shaped body type. Not only are these shirts stretchy and comfy, but they're crazy low maintenance. The shirts are wrinkle-free, machine washable, and hang dry in about 20 minutes. Guys, I am not kidding. I heard nothing but great stuff about this company, and I finally went in and got myself a dress shirt and a pea coat. They are my two favorite clothing items in my closet right now. If you've never shopped with them before, head over to stateandliberty.com and use our promo code POSTGAMESHAKE for 10% off today. Do it.
That was our interview with St. Louis Blues forward Zach Sanford. Obviously really appreciative that he came on. Had a great time talking to him. It's cool to talk to a kid that's played in the NHL playoffs. And he's just a really nice kid. So, Timmy, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was awesome. Got to ask him a lot of questions about things we haven't been able to talk to other guests about, playoffs, like you mentioned, and just, different personalities in the locker room. So it was a good time. I know we both enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on, we want to dive right into kind of the hot topic. We have a lot of fun talking about the NFL, and the 2019 season has officially begun with some pretty legitimate free agency stuff going on, / trades. Yeah. What do you want to start with? Obviously the elephant in the room is Antonio Brown.
Yeah. We both agree hardcore that he's just kind of burying himself in Oakland compared to where he was in Pittsburgh. But I mean, he made his bed. Now he's going to go lie in it and see if he can, I don't want to say put his money where his mouth is, but because he got paid and that was, I guess, his goal. I don't know, but I mean,
dude, that's ridiculous. I don't understand. Like, people, and then people talked about Antonio Brown coming to the Patriots, and just like the fact that he went to the Raiders makes me so happy that he didn't come to the Patriots, because I don't care how much you're rebuilding an organization, which the Raiders are doing an okay job after they basically lit the organization on fire. Dude, the guy obviously doesn't care about winning football games. And the Patriots are based off winning football games. So if you want to take a few extra million dollars and then go waste away in Oakland, California, no offense if you're listening and you live in Oakland, probably slim chance. That place is nothing. That's maybe like a bottom five place that I'd want to play regardless of the fact that they suck.
Muzz, they're moving to Vegas.
This coming year?
Next year.
So they got one more year in Oakland, right?
Yep.
Okay. That's okay, so Vegas is sick, but they still suck.
They still suck. Whether it's where it's a sweet place to play or not, I think it's a dumb decision. But then that's for like I can name a multitude of different reasons why I think it's a bad decision, but it's, you know, like I said, he made his bed. So we'll see what happens. I mean, they just got Tyrell Williams from they signed him in free agency. He played for the Chargers. So, I mean, he have a couple legit weapons, and I don't think Derek Carr is the answer there. So I think that's the ultimate problem.
Yeah, man. Derek Carr, I don't know. We kind of talked about that, but it's just a weird concept to me, especially with the talent that he is. You could go anywhere you want, and you're going to get paid a significant amount. Maybe, I don't know, $1 million less. I don't know what it is. I'd be guessing. But, dude, go somewhere where you can win. Why would you not want to win? But if you're all about the money, hey, good for you. It's a job. Feed your family. Do your thing. I just – probably the last place I would have went.
Yeah. So the other two things that I made sure I wanted to bring up and ask your opinion on was Le'Veon to the Jets.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. If you're asking, like, as a Patriots fan perspective – obviously, I think it's a great move for the Jets. There's no reason not to go out and get Le'Veon. I think that the more – and I say this, I think this, but it's obvious, pretty obvious that the more talent you have on your team, the better your team's probably going to be. But I think at the same time, I don't understand why people don't copy the Patriots more, where it's – you don't need – running backs are a dime a dozen. Why pay a guy? Why not go out and get a more essential position where you can just have me or you running behind from the running back position and still gain 3 or 4 yards of carry. So,
yeah, I think the Steelers showed that they can win without a all pro, you know, first team all pro running back. And they did that with James Conner. Now they didn't have as good of a season as they've had in the past, but it wasn't because of the running game. I think it was their other issues there, but
one of them being Antonio Brown.
Yeah. I think he was probably one of those reasons that they weren't as great, but I am just, it's the whole thing is funny because he was holding out to get this massive contract and he basically signed for what he would have gotten last year if he played for the Steelers. So he just essentially gave up a year of playing to get the same deal he would have gotten. And if you wanted to resign with the Steelers, I think they would have given him something around the same kind of offer. So it's the whole thing is funny. He thought he was going to get a lot more money than he did, and he obviously didn't. And I just think the whole thing is just comical.
It is, especially considering how well James Conner did. I think it hurt his value.
It definitely hurt his value. If the Steelers had a tough year at running back or on offense, they're like, man, we really could have used him. I think people would be like, okay, yeah, I think I see his value. But yeah, James Conner, his Le'Veon's worst enemy is James Conner, whether he knows it or not.
He knows it. He knows it. He's got to know it. And I know you got to put on that show and be like, yeah, that's my guy out there doing his thing.
Yeah.
But that's your guy out there that's costing you a lot of money.
Yeah. So I think the last one that I know you're most excited about is the Browns. And the Browns have – it's no secret that they're your second favorite team in the NFL. So, I mean, we chatted a little bit offline about another bet this year for over-under Browns wins. The over-under for Vegas, I think, is at 8.5 or 9, if I'm not mistaken. It's always a little bit lower than you think it should be. The Patriots are always like 11, and I think they'd hit that over every year before last year. So – I mean, I know you're buying the Browns AFC North and Super Bowl hype. Do you actually believe they can make it to the AFC Championship game and possibly the Super Bowl? Do you believe that?
I don't think they'll make it to the Super Bowl just because it's such a new team with a lot of young guys. And I think they're too much drama with all those guys. Like, but at the same time, they got so much flair and they kind of have the it factor. Like OBJ, I'm not a big fan, but kind of has that like chip on his shoulder. Baker Mayfield has more of a chip on his shoulder than anybody in the NFL, it seems like. If they made it to the Super Bowl, I don't think anybody would be surprised. Obviously, I'm all in on the Browns. I've kind of just been infatuated with them, like, rebuilding and the whole Josh Gordon saga forever. And it's just really cool to see what they can do. So it's awesome for the city of Cleveland, especially if it works out. I'm taking the over on that 8.5, so let me know.
I'm not taking the under on the 8.5. I think we discussed a larger number that maybe we can get to at another time. But I'm not buying the Super Bowl hype only because I don't even think they're going to win the division, and that isn't because I'm a Ravens fan. I think they they still need to put together a full season. And whether you want him there or not, they haven't put together a full season. They put together a great second half last year. But I just, that article came out about Jimmy Haslam and what his ownership does to the team, not positively but negatively. And I just think rookie head coach, it's a lot of personalities to handle. That guy's never been a head coach anywhere, not even like college. I don't think he's been a high school head coach in football. And I just think there's a lot of personalities to handle, like you mentioned. I might even pick him to win the AFC North next year.
Yeah, I think that the biggest piece for them is John Dorsey. You take a look at the amount of guys he's gotten rid of and the amount of guys he's brought in. He had no problem getting rid of big name guys. Obviously cut ties with Josh Gordon, which was absolutely the best move for them. And I think the Patriots signing Josh Gordon was a great move for them. So it was mutual. I think that they got a chance, man.
You're right. You're right in the fact that if they do well, no one's gonna be surprised. But I'll be very surprised if they win like 12 games. If they go like 10-6 and get a wild card, I'd be like, okay, that's like probably what they're supposed to do. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they went 8-8 and underachieved. At the end of the season, you just be like, okay, like who didn't see that coming? You know what I mean?
It's the Browns.
Yeah. So like they could have all this talent in the world. I mean, they have two of the three highest paid receivers in the NFL, and Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. Baker's legit. I mean, they have the talent, but the most talented teams don't always win. That's, you know, not a new fact or anything. So it's just they have a lot to get over, and I think it'll be interesting to see if they can get over the hump.
Who do you think wins the AFC North?
Steelers.
Okay, so you think they bounce back from losing Antonio and obviously James Conner they had all year, but okay. I'm okay with that. It's the Steelers, as long as Big Ben's still there and Juju looks great. So that'll be interesting. We'll be able to talk about that more.
As long as Big Ben is still there, that's the big factor there. Until he leaves, it's his division, whether I want to admit it or not. But it is. So until that changes, until the guard changes, and even though the Ravens won last year, I mean it's their division by no means. So
yeah. Side note: a little disappointed. Golden Tate didn't sign with the Pats. Thought he'd be a great Patriot. I know there's not really much to talk about there. And then what do you think, Earl Thomas with the Ravens? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they lost Weddle, and then they didn't lose Weddle. They cut Weddle, you know, for better or for worse. I mean, I'm in this state of mind to where like I'm not gonna just sit here and try to criticize it's a new GM this year. He kind of took over for Ozzie Newsome, but they got rid of Weddle and they couldn't re-sign CJ Mosley. I think I read that, you know, you just got to put a number on your guys you're trying to keep, and if the number goes way above it, you can't mortgage the franchise by keeping like an inside linebacker. It just doesn't make any sense. And they basically did that to keep Flacco, and they've been paying for it ever since. They're still paying for it by paying some of his money that he's not playing for them this year. So Earl Thomas kind of fills the void of safety. They don't have the void in middle linebacker. I like the signing. I'm not as crazy about Mark Ingram. I just don't think he's the running back that, like, the whole Lamar Jackson thing lets them play football without having to like have this huge money running back. They can basically play with anybody because of kind of Lamar Jackson. That's what they did last year. So now he could prove me wrong. Someone's got to score touchdowns from the 1 yard line, and I'd rather it not be Lamar Jackson. So if that's the case, he scores 15 touchdowns from the 1 yard line. Great. You know what I mean? So
I think that's his, if you want to talk fantasy wise, that's it. Mark Ingram's fantasy value is he's going to just, they're going to run the ball a ton, and he's going to have the opportunity to punch it in from within 5 yards, and you're going to try not to kill Lamar Jackson. Yes. But I think at the same time, you kind of see who Mark Ingram is when you compare his time in New Orleans with and without Alvin Kamara. Because without Alvin Kamara, he was kind of bottled up for the most part. He was okay. He was good. I think I kept him 1 year in fantasy. Like, he had a good season here and there. But he was just much better with Alvin Kamara because they were like the hot and cold type deal. It was like, we're going to hit you hard with Mark Ingram, and then we're going to throw this elusive back at you and going to keep you guys on your toes – or on your heels, I should say. And then in Baltimore, I don't know if he's really built for that, like, option-style play. I mean, maybe he is, but
– that's the thing. Like, Alex Collins had never taken a read option snap in his life, and so that's kind of why – and he also got hurt, but that's kind of why they went more towards – Gus Edwards, because he had done the read option style in college. So
right.
I don't know. Mark Ingram, I think I read the article about that he took, you know, almost exclusively all the snaps out of the pistol or single or you know, under center. So I don't know if he fits either. Now, that's not to say that they can't figure it out, but they didn't overpay him. There was rumors that they were going after Le'Veon Bell. The rumors, I guess, were untrue. Maybe the Jets were kind of compete against themselves to see how much money they could give them, but that's that. I don't know, the Patriots didn't make any big moves, did they?
I'm trying to think. Not really. Nothing. No, nothing yet. I feel like there was one thing. Besides, the biggest thing they did was tender Josh Gordon.
I know they already
talked about that.
Yeah, they also lost. Was it Trent Brown to the to the Lions? So I think that was that probably the biggest news. And I don't. They definitely weren't going to pay him how much he got for the Detroit. So it wasn't a shock or anything. But so those are kind of the news and notes from our teams, and also the highest. The highest news from the NFL. So that's kind of that. Anything else you want to wrap up there?
Nope, I'm good with that. I'm just pumped that there's NFL news because it's funny. We kind of talked about, hey, like when the NFL season's over, we're not going to really have, what are we going to talk about? Because this is just the most fun thing to talk about for us. And it's great that the 2019 season's already kind of begun. And it'll lull for a little bit. There'll be a nice little dip, but just nice to be back on it.
But it is crazy that like it dominates the news coverage, whether it's the beginning of the 2019 season and signings, or the combine, or now that the draft's coming up in April, and after that it'll be mini camp in June. Like it just it dominates it, whether you want to admit it or not. So I know it's good for us to have something to chat about. But to transition, the other big news, I don't say around the sports world, but it's around the the United States, is this college admission scandal. What are your first impressions on people paying $400,000 for kids to be a quote unquote star recruit at some of these universities?
Maybe I'm just so numb to how crazy the world is, but I just wasn't surprised at all.
I wasn't either. I was talking to my cousin about it this weekend, and I was like, it's amazing this hasn't happened before. And he's probably like, oh, it's probably happened a million times before. I'm like, yes, but it's a miracle that it took this long for it to be like discovered and prosecuted.
Yeah, this day and age, nothing's a secret for longer, for a long enough time. It's gonna come out.
And you're trying to think of like two sides, right? Like if there's the one story of like somebody paid the Yale women's soccer coach to take $400,000 to say that this girl was her top recruit to get into Yale. Like $400,000 is a lot of money.
Absolutely.
For anybody. $400,000 is a ton of money for a college soccer coach. So like you got to look at it like if nothing ever happened, like $400,000 is life changing. Like it's crazy to think that kind of money was being shelled out for kids to get into college.
Yeah, I get it. If you have enough, like for these people, $400,000 is me and you throwing a couple hundred bucks down and kind of cementing where your child's future is headed. But like we said, like, are you going to pay 400 grand for somebody, for your daughter to go to USC? I mean,
no, God, no. Like, I mean, USC is a good school and it's in Southern California, but like 400 grand to get to Harvard, to go to Harvard, Yale, MIT, Stanford. Stanford would be one thing, but like USC, I just think that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Harvard, Yale, like the name is going to take you places. But other than that, just work to get in somewhere and do well and make connections there. Every school, for the most part, has good connections. Unless this kid's like so obsessed with going there. And I don't know. I don't know, man. It's a weird little dynamic.
For the most part, it's less about where you went and more about what you get out of it and the connections you make and how hard you work. And then, you can go pretty much anywhere. And if you try hard enough to find a connection somewhere, somehow you can make it. So, but I mean, I'm not saying that I wouldn't want a Harvard degree, to fall back on, but I just think it's just crazy. I mean, Jesus, you're thinking these kids have had every opportunity in the world. They probably went to the best. Either they went to really good public high school or a really, really good prep school, right? Had great, great tutelage all the way through high school. Like, if you can't make it into the school you want to go to, then it's probably not meant for you. But then the fact that like they're getting another chance, a third or fourth or fifth chance to get into Yale or Harvard, it's just nuts.
Yeah, I saw a weird take though. Do you know who Ben Shapiro is?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, I follow on Twitter just because I love how like controversial he is, and anything politics, I just love when people stir the pot. Yeah. I disagree with him about a lot of stuff. And he said something along the lines of, if these kids aren't failing out of these colleges, then the colleges aren't doing their job. And I don't know how you feel about that. It might take you a second to like process it, but he's basically saying, if you pay to get into the school that you weren't qualified to get into, that you would essentially, you should be failing out. And that a lot of this is on the schools. And I went so back and forth on that, but I don't think that any of these kids would fail out. I think that the line between getting into some of these schools and not getting in is so fine that, yeah, maybe they're a little less qualified, but they're not going to fail out.
Yeah, maybe not fail out, but they definitely should be getting straight A's.
Right. Yeah. I'd love to see what this girl's transcript looks like.
Yeah. So I think I agree with him on some of that to the point, but that's the rumor, right? Like neither of us, you know, got into Harvard or could get into Harvard, but I think we've heard that it's really hard to get into. And then once you're there, it's, you know, not easier than other schools, but it's not like the people should be failing out. Like that's not what ends up happening. And
yeah,
whether that's the right thing or not, I don't know. It's probably not the right thing. You know, when kids just get in there and failing out, that's pretty, you know, just backwards, but I don't know.
Yeah. But I think that for these schools, there's a finite amount of spots that you have to offer, and you're trying to take the kids that are not only the smartest, but have the best, you know, all around ability to succeed in life. And for the most part, schools are just testing you on your ability to read a book and to learn. And I think that most people could go into these schools and they'd do fine.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And whether that's the right thing or not, I guess remains to be seen, right?
That's a good point. That's exactly what it is. Probably not the right thing, but
yeah,
can't really change it.
Probably not. So I think that's the last thing we wanted to touch on. Anything you wanted to bring up quickly before we wrap up today?
No, I just want to hammer home Murray State in the Final Four.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. You know what? If it happens, like we have it on record that you didn't just pick in your bracket, you like stated it as emphatically as you did. So in that case, if they like get on a run, I'll be for sure rooting for you. But for the first game, I'll be rooting against you just to see you fail. No offense.
Okay, as long as you hop on board the bandwagon when they win the first game.
I will. I'll hop on board the bandwagon. I mean, I picked them to win the first game, but if they win the first two games, then I might buy a Murray State jersey and wear it for their Sweet 16 game.
if they make it to the Final Four, you have to buy a Murray State jersey online.
I'd say if they make it to the Sweet 16, I'll wear one or buy one and I'll wear it during the game. We can watch it together.
All right, unreal. I'm in. I'll buy one too.
All right, deal.
All right, let's go.
All right, Murray State all the way. So that's all we have for today. I think, you know, a lot of topics to cover, as we mentioned, which is always fun for us.
Yeah, it's nice to just be able to ramble. Like, I feel like we've been kind of forcing it, haven't really had anything to talk about. It's great to just be able to chat about some football and some March Madness. This is the best time of year. As soon as maybe tomorrow or /today, because this is Tuesday, but once March Madness starts, you got March Madness. When's the Masters?
April like 15th, I think.
Okay, and then playoff hockey and playoff basketball, and then baseball starting. Like we're finally back into warm weather.
Yeah,
this is the best time of year.
I know you're a Thrones guy, right?
I watched the first season. I might get back into it because I just finished Parks and Rec last night.
Oh, so you're not a Thrones guy? Well, I mean, you are, but you're not. But like,
I'm not. If I had to be one or the other, I'm not, because I gave up on it like months ago. But I'm probably gonna get back into it. We'll see.
So I thought you were, because the first episode of the last season releases on the night of after the Masters, Sunday of the Masters. So if you wanted to get into it, you better get on it quick.
Wow, that's it's funny. I had talked to my friends about that, and they said, "Hey, you just got to catch up by April, whatever it is." And I was like, yeah, sure. And I completely forgot about it. But maybe we'll see. I got some downtime now at night. I got to blow off some steam after I study. So maybe I'll do that.
There you go. So, yeah. So April 14th is what the day is. Yes, yeah, so you're right. You're totally right. It's the March Madness Masters playoffs. It's warm weather. It's freaking awesome. So, yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped for Thursday and get this going.
Yeah. Hell yeah. All right. That wraps it up, though. We're good, right?
All right. Let's get out of here.
All right. We appreciate you guys listening again. Like Timmy always says, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. What else can you do? You subscribe? Can you like it? No, you can't like it.
Leave us a review. Yeah, absolutely. You can do all those things. You can just listening is helpful. But and we're always thankful. So thank you again for listening.
Yep. And honestly, tell us how much you love us.
Hey, oh my God! There he is.
It's gonna keep going until I think of something better to say.
Yeah, and we're not very good at thinking of better things to say, so we'll be here for a while.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that does it.
All right, peace.
See ya.